Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Monica Whitlock, and on assignment, I've been in conversation with a young woman in Afghanistan, living under severe Taliban restrictions. She's full of life and determination, as you'll hear. The voice of Sheikh Mohammed Khalid Hanafi, Minister for the Promotion of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice in Afghanistan. He's setting out details of the Taliban restrictions on the sound of women's voices. It is written that women must not raise their voices aloud in prayer, he says, let alone sing songs. According to the Law on Moral Decency, first issued in August 2024, no woman should read devotions aloud in a gathering or recite the a cappella chanting, tarana, that is still allowed in Afghanistan in place of music. It stipulates that a woman can only leave her house alone in case of urgent need, and then she must cover her body, her face, and her voice.
Hello to everyone who'll hear me without seeing me. I extend my heartfelt greetings to all as you discover the hope, passion, strength, and energy that define me, a young Afghan girl, amid the sadness that geography has imposed upon me.
This is the diary of one young woman in Afghanistan. We'll call her Layla, though it's not her real name, and I can't tell you where she lives. Layla was a university student when the Taliban returned to power in 2021. Now she's at home, day after day, navigating the rules as best she can. These are her thoughts through 2 weeks of this autumn, in conversation with me, Monica Whitlock, for assignment on the BBC World Service. It's not her voice you can hear, everything must be hidden, but they are her words.
I have a passion to write about everything. I have a lot to say. Sometimes hearing can better express than seeing. Day 1. It's already morning when I open my eyes. My hands are trembling more than usual. I close my eyes and take several deep breaths. Life continues, whether you're a lion in the forest, free, or a dove in a cage. I need to do some exercise. So I put on a black veil, covering my face and hiding myself in the darkness. I toss my sport clothes into my bag and leave the house. No one must know where I'm going. If a taxi driver asks, I'll remain silent.
Taxi drivers are not allowed to let women into their cars or rickshaws unless they're accompanied by a male relative.
The Taliban roam the city armed. As I pass the Taliban post, I proceed cautiously, concealing my water bottle beneath my clothes. I walk slowly, keeping my head down. No eye contact, no laughing or anything that might draw attention. We meet in an abandoned house each day. We have dance on Mondays and yoga on Thursdays and Zumba the rest of the days. We play music, but keep the volume low to avoid detection. We move quietly. Sometimes we laugh together, filling the space with friendship. Occasionally we dance, and I feel that our shared spirits defies our oppression, talking and laughing together. I find joy in exercise. It's a forbidden activity. Men are free to attend sports clubs. It seems that merely being a woman is viewed as an offense. Our whole life is a secret. I often wonder about women in other parts of the world. Do they feel guilty for exercising? Day 2. I study my lessons. 12 hours a day, non-stop, I study, learning English. It's very quiet in our house. I hear the sound of vehicles and the voices of children playing in the alley.
From inside her house, Leila has recorded her world on her phone. We don't often hear sound recordings from Afghanistan these days, so we're playing you every scrap at full length.
I have lived in this house my whole life, with all my brothers and sisters. Our alley, I tell you from the start, it's an old, worn-down place. Winters here are especially hard. When it rains, the muddy paths are almost impossible to walk through. But here was always a bond, a warmth that flowed among the women of the alley. It didn't matter if we weren't allowed to visit each other's homes. Somehow, these boundaries only brought us closer together, making us friends over the tops of walls, sharing secrets and laughter that brightened our hearts. My mother would sit in our little garden, cleaning fresh greens, and a neighbor's daughter would peer over the wall, chatting with her. Or on Thursdays, the smell of sweet halva would fill the air from Zermina's home. Zermina, the addict's wife, with her bruised face. When a woman was cooking, she'd send the children out with a plate of food to the neighbors. I really like the beauty of these secret friendships. Life in Afghanistan didn't seem scary to me, although being a girl was always difficult. I can't count the number of my friends who have left. Some of us are dead. Some of us have migrated, and some of us are still struggling with life here. Day 3. Yesterday, it was a cloudy and rainy day. The Taliban found the abandoned house where we went for exercise and locked the door. They took the owner away with them. I think we're going to exercise at home. We haven't had electricity for around 3 hours. And about internet, it's not all the time stable, especially at night. Today, I'll go out and record the sounds of the city. I'm inside a rickshaw, so it's quite dark. Most of the rickshaw drivers play music illegally. But when they see the Taliban, they stop quickly. I see an old man carrying pieces of steel on a cart. Children are playing, and some women are walking on their burqas. Heavy traffic. Many cars have stopped. A Talib dressed as a traffic officer is guiding vehicles.
Leila was born around the time that American and Allied troops entered Afghanistan, forcing out the old Taliban regime in 2001. She went to school all through her childhood, and she and her sisters became the first girls in their family to read and write. They progressed to university and had ambitious plans for their adult lives, part of a new generation of qualified women.
Day 4. In the summer of 2021, we were thankful that our region had been mostly free from war and suffering for several years. Hunger, poverty, and theft were manageable. Wheat fields surrounded our home, creating a beautiful landscape with purple, red and yellow meadows that look like soft fabric. In the evenings, I often visited these fields. In those brief years, when we felt somewhat safe, my father was less strict, allowing Yalda, our neighbor's daughter, and me to go out. We didn't go far. We would run, twirl, and dance in the meadows, though we often felt guilty for laughing. Even small moments of freedom felt wrong. During those hot months, the TV often showed updates about the President of the United States, and I learned that American forces were preparing to leave Afghanistan. Fear filled my heart.
Just to tell you, Layla recorded some of that gunfire herself inside her house.
I felt restless and heartbroken, terrified of being hurt at school or having acid thrown on me in the street. The heat and the stifling nights were unbearable. The Taliban came close to the city, and their night attacks haunted our minds like a nightmare. We were suffering and exhausted.
Walking home one day, Layla saw a crowd gathering in the street. As she drew closer, she saw the corpse of a man hanging high on a crane. "This is what becomes of those who disobey," said the Taliban who'd shot and displayed him. Layla ran away as fast as she could. In shock, she couldn't eat for days.
The alley would fall silent, empty, and everyone locked away in their homes. Even the children were too afraid to play outside. The meadows became a battleground, and Yelda's brother was found dead among the wheat fields. Yelda and I survived, but we felt neither alive nor truly living, and we were left with our traumas and a heart trapped within four walls. We learned to draw meaning from the smallest things, to hold on to life however we could. "We don't have electricity right now. My phone doesn't charge. I'll be online later." Day 5. Although Taliban banned any sound from women or music, we still do it in our house. Not in public. We have a tradition of singing together until the sun rises. The Taliban came to our house and warned us, but they could not stop us.
When Layla's mother was a child in the 1980s, Soviet troops were occupying Afghanistan. As that war receded, anti-Soviet fighters called Mujahideen took over, and a new civil war began as they battled for power. This was in the early 1990s. Some Mujahideen groups, in the name of Islam, closed down girls' schools and made women cover themselves up.
My mother's whole life has been spent in war. My mother was going to school when a Mujahideen came. They were like Taliban, but still, she went to school. The Mujahideen killed my mother's teacher near the school and wrote on her body, "Whoever goes to the school, this is the punishment." And after that, my mother stopped studying and got married. But my mother says that she still dreams some nights that she is going to school.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. The Taliban rose to power through this chaotic time and took the capital, Kabul, in 1996. They stamped their control by shutting all girls' schools and brought in extreme rules on what people could wear and do and say. Everyone from that time remembers how the Taliban executed people in public, smashed televisions, banned music and burnt musical instruments. Hundreds of thousands of Afghans fled over the 5 years of this first Taliban era.
In the afternoons, my mother collects fragrant leaves from the garden and makes tea. She mixes in the memories of those years. She gets so immersed in the stories that the tea gets cold. When my mother talks about the first Taliban era, you can see her sorrow and grief written into her skin. Even if she doesn't shed tears, we can sense her crying. My mother says that during those 5 years, they breathed but were not alive. She says they had no electricity, did not know television, and their only share of life was a radio that had to be hidden. She says that she always wanted to go out and buy clothes for herself. During all those 5 years, my mother left the house twice. She spent her time under the mulberry tree with the radio and Ahmad Zahir's tapes. Our whole life is a secret. Do you know Ahmad Zahir? This one is my favorite.
Ahmad Zahir, superstar of Afghan pop music. He was huge in the 1970s, peaceful years before all these waves of war began. He played live in packed concerts. He was always on the radio and made more than 20 albums. His love songs have passed from hand to hand and heart to heart for two generations, the cassette tapes growing soft and fuzzy over the years. People say that everyone can find themselves in Ahmad Zahir. The Taliban destroyed his grave in Kabul, but his fans never stopped listening.
My mother says she had to come to terms with captivity. I mean, even if she'd had wings, she couldn't fly. Although she's uneducated, she's very open-minded. I never understood anything about that life until history repeated itself in 2021. We were trees that had just begun to sprout. We were young and vibrant. But they turned our spring of life into autumn. They turned us into firewood, and we burned and turned to ash. My mother. She doesn't leave the house. Where would she go? Crying face. Day 6. We have a big garden where I drink tea every evening and sometimes read a book. We keep chickens in one corner. We grow corn, roses, and pinks. I don't know all the names in English. Smiley face, smiley face. There's a deep peace in it. The warm wind shakes the trees like a curtain and wild clouds run in the sky. The only place where I feel free is our garden. Because no one can see me and I can take off my hijab. I lie down and I breathe deeply. I read something or play music. Today I'm tired and bored. I take out my AirPods and went outside listening to music.
Layla passes her time as best she can. You can hear how good her English is. She's learned it through an Afghan online community offering remote learning. And she teaches younger girls in secret underground classes. She reads deeply and widely Anne Frank, Emily Bronte, and the classic Russian novels. But despite all her efforts, she's often lonely.
Day 7. Sometimes I'm very depressed at home. I go upstairs and then come downstairs and wander to the yard. We say, what if I had the freedom to go out and walk freely? I say these things only to make you understand the value of free life. In Afghanistan, there are two groups of people. Those who have become like the walking dead here, and those who have left. Migration is not easy, but it is much, much better than life in this jail country. My childhood friend left before the Taliban took over, during a time when the city was filled with fear and targeted killings. It doesn't matter where I am, whether in the midst of war, hearing the sounds of chaos, or lying in my bed, or enjoying a quiet night under the moon. I constantly think of her, remembering how we flew kites together, our time at school, our jokes, and our laughter. I recall how we held each other's hands tightly so we would not lose each other. When she left, her grandmother became a bit more hunched over, and our sorrow deepened. Her grandmother said her umbilical cord was cut twice, once at birth and again when she migrated. The second time was far more painful. No place in the world can truly feel like home for someone fleeing a difficult life. My friend dreams she is still here.
Leila's lost many friends, relatives, and classmates in her short life. Several have made it abroad as refugees. Others have died. Even inside their houses, they were not safe. Two close friends were killed by a misjudged American missile attack. One of them was just about to marry. It's very often women and girls who have been killed in such attacks, she says, because they were indoors. Other friends have married young men who, Leila thinks, are increasingly influenced by Taliban attitudes.
Day 8. I want to share something with you. My friend, her husband, beat her. He said, "Why do you go out with your friends? Why do you wear that dress? Why don't you obey me?" Day 9. We used to have workshops and painting classes here. The Taliban say that drawing faces is a sin and they destroyed all the girls' paintings.
Leila does still draw and paint, carefully avoiding faces and choosing bright, imagined landscapes of other lands she's never seen.
Day 10. I love a cat or a dog. You don't understand how much I love animals and pets. They are your good friends forever.
As we were recording this programme, Taliban ministries issued or elaborated on new restrictions. The rules change without warning and inconsistently, so it's easy to be caught out. Three radio stations were shut down for playing music, and in one case, broadcasting women and girls' voices in phone-ins. A letter from the police in the province of Khost reads, "Some private radio stations are broadcasting school lessons. Girls are engaging in illegal phone calls with the presenters of these programs, leading to moral corruption and violating Islamic values."
Day 11. Every day a new law. Today is a rainy day. I am in the mood for writing. In the spring of last year, April 2023, on a cold evening, the thought of freedom returned to me. I hadn't left the house in 6 months. I felt like that I was being eaten away from the inside, especially as I watched the world and its madness unfold from behind the TV screen. My father disapproved of me leaving the house without a good reason. I used to go out to university, but now that there was no university, I was trapped. My mother said I should become a tailor. A lot of my friends have become tailors. While tailoring might be respectable in other parts of the world, for many of us Afghan girls, it is a source of horror. Among all the beautiful and fulfilling careers, we are seen as only good for sewing clothes. I saw a news program on TV where a Taliban spokesperson said midwifery was a suitable Islamic profession for women. The word midwife echoed in my mind, spinning around in my thoughts. The Taliban seem to want two things from women. One group to give birth, like women have become wombs on two legs. And other group becoming midwives. They stress that women should bear boys, not girls. Maybe to increase their ranks. I was so angry. My mind raced. And I felt tears inside of me. Though they wouldn't fall. I told my mother that I had to go out. She said, "Go, but be home before you get in trouble with your father." Stepping outside, I found the city deserted, not because there was no people, but because it felt dry and colorless. In a place once alive with noise, all I could hear was the sound of fear. I made my way to the park, aware that I wasn't allowed inside. I just needed to be there, to breathe deeply beneath the oak, cypress, and fir trees. I wanted to listen to the birds. I longed to pick a few roses. But in this city of horrors, love and beauty felt forbidden, nor did they allow me to enter the park. I knew I had to return home soon. My mother would be worried. Day 12. Here it is windy today. A severe storm caught our electricity. A poem for you. Who can understand all this turmoil in my sorrowful and calm face? My weary and dust-covered face is like my school bag, a bag that has held books for 4 years, collecting dust in a corner of the house. All these walls of the house are witnesses to how they imprisoned me between them. And they chained my feet so I couldn't study, write, read, or dance. Another poem. I long for a confidant, someone with whom I can share my secrets openly, not in ordinary places, but by the streams on a spring day, in a green meadow, beside the hearth, next to the fire on an autumn evening, under the starry sky on a moonlit night, or even sitting together by the heater on a winter day. Our whole life is a secret. What do you think?
You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In Our Whole Life is a Secret, Arsal Latifi gave voice to Leila's words. The presenter and producer was Monica Whitlock.